Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. I'm the Bill Arnold part of that short sentence. Proverbs 17:22 says that a cheerful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. So, you know, I always like to start the week on a lighter note, which reminds me that we take our mission to spread the gospel very seriously, but I don't take myself too seriously. And to help me do that is my friend and colleague, Patrick Albanese. He's from the great state of Iowa via the crazy state of California, via the troubled state of Chicago, via his parents. So if you've never laughed during one of our segments, you might be entitled to significant compensation. You could be part of a class action lawsuit that ends now. Phew, that was a relief, Patrick.
That window closes swiftly.
It did. It closed very quickly.
Yeah. I am the afternoons part of the Afternoons with Bill Arnold.
You are.
Yep. So just the one afternoon.
Just so you know, there's a lot of engineer types here in the studio looking nervously at Rosie and I. So it's because we have changed our software over. So this is the first live show we're doing with our brand new software. So it's there's some eyes on us today, but it's just software. It's not computers. But speaking of computers, I don't know if you read this, but the U.S. supercomputer has named its new fastest computer in the world. It does 2 quintillion calculations per second.
Per second?
Yeah, but I want it now.
Is that fast enough? I think I saw that supercomputer on Jeopardy. But you imagine that, you know, they say that Alexander Graham Bell, you know, invented the phone, but other people kind of had something similar. And they said, you know, should I get to the patent office now? You know what? This can wait till tomorrow. But Alexander Graham Bell said, you know, let's not waste any time. Let's get down there. And but there's got to be somebody that was working on a supercomputer says, Eureka, I've got one. This is going to amaze people. 1.8 quintillion calculations per second. And they say, sorry, you lose.
You're coming in second place, pal.
Yeah, it's like all those Olympians that have to, you know, they make it to the Olympics and they say, who are you running next to? Usain Bolt. Oh, okay. Well, I hope you like silver.
Yeah, exactly.
So bronze is a good color for you.
Yeah. Yes. On a serious note, today is we commemorate D-Day, and you sent me a brilliant piece by Eisenhower, which I think I'd love for you to read if you have it in front of you. If not, I'm happy to read it.
Let's see. Where did it go? Oh, I'm fine. You know, I'll
read it then.
Okay.
This was Eisenhower's In Case of Failure D-Day letter. Our landings in the Shabu Havra region have failed to gain a satisfactory foothold, and I have withdrawn the troops. My decision to attack at this time and place was based upon the best information available. The troops, the air, and the Navy did all that bravery and devotion to duty that duty could do. If any blame or fault attaches to this attempt, it is mine alone. Who talks like that anymore?
Nobody. No, it's all that, whatever that, remember they had I think it was a Doritos commercial, and you know the refrain was, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. You know, it's everything is always somebody else's fault. Sometimes it is.
Now I get it, but we do push a lot of blame around.
Yeah, back in on D-Day they were using flamethrowers. Now we use blamethrowers, right? Yeah. we say it's not in. I think the closest we get is people say, well, it's not entirely my fault. But we now have people that say, I take full responsibility And then the rest of us are kind of doing the old noggin scratch where we say, well, I don't know what that means. You take full responsibility and... No, that's it. I take full responsibility.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I'm not going to quit my job or anything like that, and I'm not going to pay a fine, and really nothing's going to happen. But I want you to know I take full responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Now,
that's easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Patrick, in the greater Des Moines area, have the schools let out for summer?
Yes.
Okay, so the kids are on vacation?
The kids are on vacation, and now that my son has finished the elementary school, as of last Thursday, made my nearly 3,000th and final trip through what we affectionately call the Snake. It enters right off of one busy street and exits in that same area, and it snakes around in a serpentine-like fashion. And it changes your personality by the time you come out the other side. And we call it the Snake because you think you might need a poison control center because you say, where did all of this rage come from? I entered here in a good mood.
Yeah.
You know, so now I because I've been going to that school for dropping kids off there for 8 years, my son and daughter will be at the same middle school. And it's amazing. The parents do not linger in the drop-off lane at the middle school. They practically push their kids out of the car. I mean, the cars don't stop. They're moving, and the kids are jumping out and saying, see ya.
Yeah.
So the drop-off there is much easier, much easier. So I see, and in a way, I say, well, you know, I'm happy because I'm not going to miss that hassle. But then I realize the kids are growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I'll go back and I'll drive past that school. It's nearby, affectionately looking at it, saying, I remember when my kids were young and cute and respectful.
I'm sure your kids will stay that way. Yeah. Well, you sent me a cartoon, which I chuckled because it was the two old guys from The Muppet that sit in the Queen's booth in the theater. And one was saying to the other, why is talking sexually in the workplace considered sexual harassment to adults, but talking about sexuality to children at school is considered essential?
Yeah. And then you sent I couldn't have worded it better myself. Do you want to, I love what you said. You said, because Satan is moving his agenda along and he waits and he watches for the best way. And he likes to get the young, doesn't he?
Yep. I think if you can injure children at the earliest age possible, he has a place to reenter later in life. I mean, damage and trauma, I think, is always the goal of the enemy. That's why protecting our kids is so important.
When you're younger, you maybe don't think about these things as much. But you start to understand why it hurts so much when they see the innocence of a child stolen, because you realize it's irreplaceable. Once it's gone, it is gone. You know, as a dad, I say, well, you know, I don't want to protect my kids from all the harshness of the world. There's times when they realize, hey, you've got chores to do and you're not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there's reality. In fact, they're upstairs right now. I don't know how my wife did this. My kids are washing the floor.
Oh.
Yeah. I see, you know, and I'm the kind of person I'd be like, I can't ask the kids to wash the floor. I shall just do it. It's so easy. But, you want to protect them from the harsh realities of life as long as possible. Mm-hmm. Until they grow up and slowly get to realize that life is sometimes tough and sometimes unfair. And that's why you need God.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, let's go back to the rage in the Snake, because I think that if you don't tame that, you end up being like these two golfers at the Villages in Florida. And I found this story to be kind of sad in a way, but a guy who is 77 punches his friend who's 84 over golf etiquette. I love that the fight was over golf etiquette. I mean, who's going to pay for that kind of irony nowadays?
Could you imagine Emily Post and Miss Manners getting into a big fisticuffs over where the spoon goes next to the... No, this is where the salad fork goes.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
Imagine if the two of them were doing, you know, what they did on Twitter these days. they'd be saying, here's how you properly, you set a dinner place. And then Miss Manners would chime in and say, why, you couldn't be more wrong. I guess I have to admire, and maybe it's that Florida sun that gives you the energy, but a 77-year-old guy saying, you know what? Here's my buddy over there. And can you believe that he picked up his ball, he put down the dime, and he didn't put the ball back in the same place. I think the only solution to this is to punch him.
Yeah, so
I'm hoping I don't get to that point.
Yeah, it all started that you never dealt with your rage in the snake. I think that's what happens when you don't deal with the rage in the snake.
Yeah, well, I don't know if those guys were actually dropping kids off at school back when they were doing it. You know, you try to do the nostalgia stories, the old I walk to school. Yeah, I don't do a very good job of that with my kids sometimes. I say, well, you know what, when I was a kid, I had to drive to school barefoot both ways. So, uphill.
Yeah.
It was a manual transmission. It doesn't. So sounds pretty good, Dad.
Yeah. I don't think they're buying it. We'll take a break and we'll come back more with Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from the great state of Iowa. You are listening to The Afternoon Show. I'm so glad you joined me. We'll be right back.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
That walk-up song belongs to Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from the great state of Iowa. See, Patrick, because it is Pride Month, which is unbelievable that it's a whole month, but there's kinds of sports teams now that are trying to have Pride Night, and the Tampa Bay Players had an option of wearing the logo, the LGBTQ logo, or not. And I think there were about four players that chose not to wear it. And, of course, the Twitter users lit up, saying that players who chose not to display support were homophobic. And I thought, well, it's an interesting word because I think they use it as a weapon because they're basically saying, if you don't agree with that position, you are a homophobe. And I think what it says is, I'm a better person than you are.
Yeah.
It's shaming.
And doesn't phobe also means fear, right?
Yes.
I mean, you could be a fearophobe, afraid of scary things, I suppose. But I don't even understand what fear has to do with things. I mean, you would think they would, if they were really trying to shame somebody, they would try to find a way to say that you're a hater, but then they actually usually just say you hate people. But if you read the article, they talked about their love of Jesus. They also talked about their love of their fellow humans, but they just didn't believe that that was something that was biblically condoned.
Mm-hmm.
So, in simpler times, I think people would have just said, well, to each their own, right? That used to be something I saw a very interesting conversation that started with this. And it was actually some people who were gay saying, this movement's getting out of control because we just wanted to be accepted, left alone. But people are pushing agendas so much that we're fearing that there will be a backlash and people will say to all of us that, we don't like you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that being a concern because you see the things going on in some of the schools now. I mean, they'll have the drag queen shows for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, I'm not entirely certain that's appropriate. I don't see how this, fits in anything. But, if you speak out against it, again, there's that phobe thing again.
Right.
Why the phobe?
Well, the phobe is a device that allows you to convey this message. I'm a good person. You're not. Or I'm tolerant and you're not. Or I'm mentally healthy and you're not. So I think it's just a dividing line because, you and I have lots of gay friends, relatives. I'm not afraid of them. I'm not in the least bit afraid of him. So how would anyone be called a homophobe?
Do we have to start renaming everything now too, to be inclusive in that regard? I mean, you know, when you go to Disneyland now, do you have to say, "Hey, everybody, let's go check out Mr. Toad's He, Him, His Wild Ride"? I have, of course, the Mr. He, Him, His Coffee Maker. do we have to do that anymore? I don't know why we can't just do things simply, but maybe part of hijacking the language is just like you don't want to be called a homophobe or a phobe of any kind. You start walking on eggshells, you watch your language, and one of the last things you'll ever think of doing in a fearful environment like that is spreading the good word.
Mm-hmm.
You think this is the wrong place to actually talk to these people about the gospel. Everybody's, you know, too sensitive about everything. And then you would say, well, then they've got what they wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if you followed any of the violence over the weekend, but there were some shootings in Philadelphia. And one woman, sadly, was 20 years old. She was shot and killed, and she was pregnant, and she was pronounced dead, and they delivered her baby, and the baby is listed in stable condition. So did they, you know, what does that say? There was a baby inside that was worth saving.
There was, yeah.
Which and is always the case.
They were doing it pretty swiftly too. I don't know. I can't say there's a spin on that story that you say, wow, what a happy ending. Not a happy ending,
no.
Of course. This child will never know her mother, her mother. I didn't see, there I go. I think it's amazing that people probably didn't even think twice that when that woman ended up in the emergency room, they said, yeah, we can't save her, but we can save the baby. And they said, let's get to it.
Mm-hmm.
Save that life.
Beautiful story. I love it.
It's a beautiful story. Oh, I don't, you know, I worry that they're having a lot of success. That some of, you know, spreading the good word gets, we're taking steps backward because we seem to be always playing defense because we don't see these changes coming. We don't see that, you're going to be called a hater all the time, mm-hmm. or you're going to be called a phobe of some kind, or that somebody's going to change the language or do something so crazy like having a drag, queens dance at a school library for kids. You thought that the path ahead was pretty clear what you were supposed to do, and instead you're playing defense, just trying to get things back to normal or where they were just a few years ago so that you can move ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And it does make it hard. I think, you know, gospel will be great counsel for that, don't you?
Yeah. So have you followed any news coming out of the Supreme Court? I should have asked you this in advance instead of putting you on the spot. I don't know when a decision is going to be made on Roe v. Wade, but I would assume it's going to happen this month.
I think they said June, didn't they?
I thought I heard June, yeah. Do you anticipate seeing violence in lovely Midwestern Des Moines?
There might be a demonstration here or there. I don't think we'll see violence during the riots that a lot of cities experienced a couple of years ago. I know that Minneapolis had some real problems.
Mm-hmm.
We had the rumblings of some, but it was quelled pretty quickly here, not even through police force. The police stood in solidarity to people and said, we understand you've got, you know, concerns and problems about how things have happened for some people in some communities. That hasn't happened here. People were kind of like, you know, you're right about that. and to everybody's credit, they said, okay, well, let's keep working for reforms and let's make sure that kind of thing doesn't happen here. So I'm hopeful that, you know, I know there'll be people demonstrating no matter how things go, but I look at people on the pro-life side of the movement and, you know, for 50 years, they've been protesting, and for the most part without incident. You sometimes get people that go a little too far in things, but they have quietly tried to work their way through how they thought the court decision was made and getting the message out. You have people like Lila Rose, you know, with just slowly, carefully, you know, presenting the message, presenting, you know, the new advances in medicine and saying, just take a look at this. Just take a look at this. And I think it's really moved the needle a lot.
Mm-hmm. When I look at 2 Timothy chapter 3 in verses 1 through 5, it says, but mark this, there will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. Have nothing to do with such people. Put that into the equation.
Yeah, that's not an easy one to do because that is prevalent.
Yeah.
You know, it's we've talked about this before where people get to a certain place in life where they think, you know, I've done pretty well and I'm not entirely certain God had anything to do with it.
Oh,
I think I did this on my own.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, well, pride comes before the fall. I hope it does. I hope they don't mean Pride Month comes before the fall because July could be tough. No, it's easy to see that there was a time in our lives where we thought these things won't happen. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
But don't you, is it that we're older and wiser, just plain older? We woke up to what was always there.
I think so.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
I
think so too.
Yeah. When Jesus is having a conversation with a man in Matthew, he says, just when a man came up to Jesus and asked, teacher, what good things must I do to get eternal life? And Jesus says, well, why do you ask me about what is good? There is only one who is good. And I think, yeah. So when people talk about being good, I think, well, no, there's only one who is good. Is it you or is it Jesus? Or is it God?
Let's take a look at the scoreboard, shall we?
Yeah.
We have these delusional ideas about ourselves. I mean, you know, in high school, I was pretty sure I was going to be voted best dressed because I had the largest selection of terry cloth shirts more than anybody.
Yeah.
And I was delusional enough to think, you know, these are pretty nice shirts. Bought a lot of them myself at the store. At the Levi's store, and this should earn me that best dress, that coveted best dress award. And they gave it to a kid who wore suits.
Yeah, once again, very delusional
again,
on your part. Snubbed, yeah.
Snubbed, but we have different impressions of ourselves, and we think we're good, and we just don't want to look at the report card, do we?
Yeah. So, kids, if you want to get that best dressed coveted title, wear suits to school.
Wear a suit to school.
All right, my
Terry
friend.
Cloth is out.
Yeah, thanks for being with me to get the week started. Always enjoy our talks. Have a great week.
Me too. Thanks, you too.
Too bad. Patrick Albanese has been my friend, and a way we get things started, a little bit on the light note, which I appreciate. But after a break, the Monday afternoon mix is next with Pastor David Miles, Rosie B., and very special guest today. Be right back. Sounds
like. Says Monday.
What else?
Mix.
It's time to mix it up.
The Monday afternoon mix. Thanks. Pastor David Miles, adjunct professor at the University of Northwestern and pastor at New Hope Church in New Hope, Minnesota. And Rosie B., our producer, and very special guest, Tommy Carreras, is joining us.
Yes.
Tommy, welcome.
Hey, guys. Great to be here.
We're glad were able to join us. I know that we're very anxious to learn more about you, and I know you and David are pals, so I'll let David start this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so I've had the privilege of knowing Tommy this year, and through relationships that we have within the small group network and within ministry throughout the United States, we've been introduced to one another in a very rich way. And I love Tommy's heart for the church, for people growing, his authenticity, his transparency. And we had a really rich conversation at the Small Group Network, the lobby conference. And it was looking at issues of what does deep character formation and discipleship look like. And he was actually one of our plenary speakers. And we had some conversation afterwards. And so just last month, Tammy and I were down in Franklin, Tennessee. And so we had was super excited about it, was able to get together with Tommy and have some coffee, and it's amazing. So I know our people are going to be extremely
well
blessed.
I hope Tommy's good and plenary on our show today.
yes, I hope so.
That would be nice.
David, I will say, yes, David, I will say you are one of those guys that I can't get out of a conversation of because I'm having so much fun. I remember I was supposed to be leaving when I was talking to you after that conference. And the person who was giving me a ride to where I was headed next was like, hey, time to go. I'm like, just give me one more minute with this guy. This is too much fun. So we'll stay on time today, but that's the kind of relationship we have so far. So it's been a lot of fun getting to know you.
Well, super. Tommy, you know, I'm excited about this thing that we've been talking about. We were talking about a book called The Other Half of the Church, and it looked at four elements of deep character formation, which we'll get into a little bit later, that looks at joy. And I remember you sharing that joy, one amazing thing is that you can experience joy with almost any other emotion. And I had that happen last night as a dear friend and ministry partner, Sharon Thomas, with Glory Bound Ministries. She went home to be with the Lord last night. And so being with her as she's transitioning, and then 16 years earlier, being with her husband, same hospital, same thing, but super excited for her being with Jesus because that was her heart's desire. And at the same time, my heart just loves this dear woman. So joy was one thing. Attachment, our need for attachment, that God made us attached with people. Group identity in a healthy way, as well as healthy correction. Those are very sweet things. But what I love, Tommy, that you're doing is that, you know, you shared about anxiety, and I love this thing that you're doing called Done With Stuck.
Yeah.
Like really helping parents and actually just believers who feel stuck where they're at and with relationships and with their own growth and this whole anxiety that we're seeing flesh out in Buffalo, Uvalde, in various high schools with all these different things. So you want to speak a little bit to that, bro?
Yeah, well, the idea behind Done With Stuck, which is the organization my wife and I started, was that stuck seems to be the default spiritual status for most of us. You know, we get in this new excited phase of growth when it's the beginning, but if we're coming to find what a relationship with God looks like as an adult or as a teen, or we remember the glory days of when we were actually excited about our faith, and then we just find ourselves stuck. And maybe not the house is on fire and everything's awful, but definitely not I'm excited and I have a zeal for my faith that I, had in the beginning. And that middle ground is actually, I think for me, has been one of the most dangerous places in my life, because that's when things start to snowball. The little things become bigger things. And then the only way the house gets on fire is by starting a little bit at a time. And so that's sort of what we want to do, with catch people earlier, because we've been caught too late in the game, my wife and I, whether it's relationally or whether it was me as a pastor or me just in my own walk with God. I wanted to be caught by my friends, by the people around me a lot earlier, when I was still stuck, before I was in the ditch somewhere, And so that's what we're aiming for. And anxiety has been one of the things that at least I've ended up talking to so many people about, because it just seems like it's the most prevalent emotion that we have in our lives right now. And maybe there's a lot of things to it, right? It's the hyper-connected nature of a problem across the country is a problem for me today, right now, because of the internet and because of social media and because of the hyper-intense amount of details that we have, just gruesome details about things that are going on in the world that I can't handle because it's too much, but we're all expected to handle it. But all of that is just unlocking all of these things in us where we're not just anxious when we hear about the bad thing. I think most of us just end up being anxious all the time. And we've come to to just manage it. You know, you hear that phrase a lot, right? I manage my anxiety. Here are the best five ways to manage your anxiety. And the question that I keep wanting to ask is, since when do we want to manage things instead of heal them or solve them or fix them or address them? Manage doesn't seem like the right goal for us.
Go ahead, Rosie.
Gosh, Tommy, thank you so much for bringing just even saying what you've said thus far in this discussion on anxiety. I know in our household we've had to battle it, and learning that anxiety was the output, that there's roots first, there's intrusive thoughts that happen first, and where in your foundation are the do you need to mind for the Lord to come in and heal so that you are not having an output of anxiety? And so many times we just deal with the anxiety itself and not go further back and dig into the why, into what led you, what was the intrusive thought that led you into feeling that the world is not in God's hands or not in control. And, you know, so it's just really interesting because you have to dialogue about it. If we just deal with the symptom of anxiety, it's never going to be healed.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the most helpful things that I've learned and then that we've started to teach, and this works actually with basically anything. Anxiety is one of the most obvious ones because it's sort of like the smoke alarm, right, that lets you know that the house is on fire. Please don't put the smoke alarm out. Or like take the batteries out of the smoke alarm. Please put out the fire, right? Well, just like anxiety, all of these other things too, all these negative emotions, and even we can start seeing our behaviors like this. We want to see everything as a symptom of a problem. Everything that we experience is a symptom of something else going on because all the things are so interconnected. And that primary issue is always going to be somewhere in my heart. My heart is the source of my life. It's the wellspring of life, right? Jesus says whatever comes out of my mouth is an overflow of what's in my heart. And so something is going on in my heart, and anxiety or grief or depression or any of these other negative or anger, any of these are all symptoms of a problem. And sometimes we like to think of them, especially with anxiety. We hear a lot like, oh, you know, it's just our brains catastrophizing. Just tell it to quiet down, go sit in the corner. Nothing bad's going to happen. And then you go, well, wait. No, something bad might happen, right? So we have to decode the message that anxiety is sending us. And sometimes we find out that something's actually wrong at the bottom. And when we start seeing these negative emotions, especially anxiety, as a symptom of a problem, then we can actually go solve the problem, right? Because Jesus is not a painkiller. He's a problem solver. And he actually wants to heal the things at the bottom. And sometimes that is, exactly like you said, something wrong in the mind, something wrong in the heart. Sometimes, a lot of times, it's a fear that's rooted in something in the past that's happened to me that I have to actually now go figure out how to repair the wound in the past so that I can manage in the present better. And the anxiety in the present isn't triggering the past. Sometimes it's that. But sometimes also I'm anxious because I'm wildly overextended and overcommitted.
Right.
And I've extended myself past what I should even believe is possible to do, right? I can't work four jobs. I can't accomplish that many things. I can't put those expectations on myself. And so anxiety is the built-in alarm system that says, yo, something is wrong. Either slow down, settle down, fix something that's out of alignment in your life, like respect your boundaries and your limitations. Or actually, my favorite one is something is wrong in your heart. Something is wrong in your life. And that's where God is waiting for us. He's actually the one, I believe, sometimes ringing the alarm or, you know, fanning the smoke into the smoke alarm so it goes off so he can say, have I gotten your attention yet? Has the pain become enough that you're willing to change? Because that's where I'm waiting for you. God is not waiting for us, you know, off in the distance in heaven somewhere. We're not trying to get out of this while the world burns down and so we can get to heaven and get away. He actually wants to redeem and restore the world, not rescue us from it, but rescue us for the sake of the world. And so he's waiting, I believe, in our pain, in our fear, in our anxiety, in our intense emotions, because that's where we need him the most. And so we want healing. We have to run toward all of these painful or negative and scary emotions. That's where we're going to find him.
You know, Tommy, that's really neat. I'm trying to remember Bill or Rosie as our, you know, resident people that remember C.S. Lewis. Because was it C.S. Lewis that talks about that God whispers, you know, in the good times, but he shouts in the storm?
I know the quote. I don't know if that's C.S. Lewis. Yeah. I know that the quote, though. Yeah.
Well, one of the things C.S. Lewis did say is pain is like God's megaphone to the deaf world. And so that is exactly it. He's trying to get to us. Because pain is what usually motivates us to change unless we numb the pain, unless we manage the pain so that it doesn't hurt too much. I actually just shot a short video, you know, it's called a reel on Instagram. I shot a video for social media today, and the whole premise was that Jesus is not Vicodin, right? Jesus is not a painkiller. He's a problem solver. And I think that is, it's hard for us to remember. We try and throw comforting verses at each other. But sometimes what we do is take the pain that God was trying to use to be that megaphone and say, hey, there's a problem, and I would like to heal the problem, heal the wound, so that you can actually experience real joy, not a medicated version of joy that is less than.
Yeah, that's a good point, Tommy. And one of the things, and when we come back from break here in a little bit, as we head up to it, want to talk about, because people are sitting in this pain, this anxiety, and sometimes wondering, okay, what do I do with it? And what I love about Jesus is that he doesn't just overlook it. So in John chapter 16, verse 33, he's telling his disciples, I've said these things to you that in me you may have peace. Yeah. In the world you will have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world. And what I love about Jesus is that he doesn't just say, hey, you know, it's all cotton candy and, you know, ponies. But he's like, guys, really, there is tribulation in the world. And in that midst, I really do want to give a peace to you. And it's not going to happen by us ignoring what's going on, but inviting Jesus and the power of the gospel to enter into what it is that God is wanting to do for his glory. And so.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Tommy, can there be a fine line between anxiety that festers being stuck and anxiety that produces action?
Yeah. I think that's a great question, because what we don't want to do is, you know, just try and feel our anxiety and then just always be feeling our anxiety, right? We have to learn how to do something with it. Mm-hmm. And stuck is really the absence of action that's productive, at least. And so what we want to do is figure out what those actions are. And I think the primary actions are investigating what is happening underneath, right? Mm-hmm. So when we don't want to be stuck, we need to have not just motion for motion's sake, but productive, you know, directive motion. And I think that always begins with, I think what Paul would call, you know, we've got a more psychological counseling and neuroscience kind of version of this, but the way he put it was, you got to take every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ, not just consider it or decide that it is, but you have to make it. And I think there's a wrestling to that. Mm-hmm. And what we want to do is take those thoughts captive, which really means you got to get up close and personal with it.
Yeah.
Right. So, right. And so it's a very active process where we are getting close to our fear, close to our anxiety, and we're feeling the feelings and trying to decode the message that's coming through. One of the best ways to start that so that we could do the next step is writing it down, quite honestly.
Yeah. Tommy, we have to take a little break here. Tommy Carreras is our special guest at the Monday Afternoon Mix with Pastor David Miles and Rosie B. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back talking about being done with stuck. We are back with the Monday Afternoon Mix. Awfully glad to have a special guest, Tommy Carreras, with us today. Friend of David's, Pastor David Miles, and Rosie B. We're here talking about being done with being stuck, which I think is a great conversation. Tommy, I'm not sure if you had any thoughts that you were still holding back right before the break that you want to release unleash
now
that are stuck?
Yeah, that are stuck?
We were talking, yes, well, release them. I like that. We were talking about what it looks like to actually not stay stuck in our anxiety, but do something about it. What are the proactive steps so that we can actually be moving somewhere real? We said, you know, we take our thoughts captive, which means we have to get up close and personal with them. There's a very common phrase out there now that that I love and is exactly accurate, I think, in every way, that you have to feel to heal. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's no way to get around anxiety. You only get to go through it. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's an unfortunate, it just sucks, if I'm being real. It's a terrible truth, mm-hmm. but it's how we were designed. Right. And so one of the things to take thoughts captive that you can do is start writing things down. And the reason for that is not only do you get to sort of wrangle it a little better, but it helps engage the left side of your brain, helps you engage the prefrontal cortex, which is the rational and wise side of you. It's the side that's not freaking out because everything's going to blow up. That's the rest of your unconscious brain, especially your limbic survival system, that's usually trying to say, hey, there's probably a shark in that lake and you should not go near it. That is the irrational side of it. There are plenty of good reasons that it does those things. What we want to do is engage the wise part of our brain that can actually think logically. And that's one of the ways we do that is by writing things down. There's an incredible study done by some UCLA psychologists where they figured out that very, very literally and very physically, our cortisol in our body, our stress hormone, goes down in a very meaningful way when we write down how we feel. Mm. It was as simple as that. Wow. Literally writing the word angry when a person was angry, like, took down the activity in the amygdala, which is the center of the limbic system and sort of the emotional brain. It was unbelievable. And so writing things down is really helpful, and it helps you do the next step, which is examine the evidence. Because like we said, sometimes the brain is catastrophizing. Sometimes none of it's true and it's just, you know, some crazy thought that just was fleeting and based on some weird thing that somebody else, you know, it's total junk. But a lot of times it's based on something true. And so what we do is we examine the evidence. What am I afraid will happen? Not, I'm afraid that, you know, that everything will go bad. You know, you don't want to stay vague. You want to get really specific. What are you really afraid will happen?
Yeah.
Much of anxiety comes from the suppression of fear inside of us. And so we got to get past the anxiety, the energy created by the suppression of fear, to the fear itself. What am I worried will happen? I'm worried that somebody will see me as a bad parent. I'm worried that my kid will get hurt. I'm worried that I will lose my job if I don't perform well enough. Those are valid fears. And there's something to be said for those. And there's a possibility that those things could happen, especially if I don't pay attention to the warning signs mm-hmm. that they're happening. And so when I examine the evidence, I can figure out, yeah, that's a legitimate fear. That's an illegitimate fear. That is a 0.03% chance. And that's maybe a 20%. But then once I figure out what's true, what's false, and mostly what's just unclear, I can actually start to move toward resolution. And when I move toward resolution, then I'm engaging all of the parts of me to battle this anxiety, battle the stuckness. And if I realized it was false, man, I can now find the truth and speak that truth and say, I figured you out. Thought, I figured you out. You're not real. And I don't know where you came from, and maybe I'll go figure that out. But that's not going to happen, and I'm basically sure of that. Or if you realized it was unclear, especially if it's around a relationship or a situation, go find clarity. Go seek out the answer to the situation, right? If I'm worried my relationship with my spouse or my friend or my boss is on the line or something is going poorly there, what's the best thing to do? Move toward them and say, hey, I don't know how this has been going. What did you mean when you said that? Or how am I doing it at serving you? Or do you want to spend some more time with me? I would really like that. And I've just been wondering if you want to do that too. Or is there anything off between us? You know, is there anything you need to tell me? Bring it out into the open. That's moving toward potential pain. But at the same time, it's reducing all of this suppression of fear that we're doing because we're moving toward resolution.
Yeah,
and if
I
we can find the problem, we can fix it.
Yeah, Tommy, one of the things you're noting on is this constant call for dialogue, mm-hmm. sometimes dialogue with ourselves, dialogue with God. And, you know, One of the passages that we've loved here is like Psalm 42 and 43, and you find David in the psalm after thinking through a number of different things that he's going through. He says, "Why are you downcast, O my soul, and why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God, for I shall again praise him, my salvation and my God." And you know what he did in that? He wrote it down.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes writing it down, it actually gets it external to ourselves.
Yes.
You know, because you're actually putting it down on a piece of paper. Neil Postman wrote a book called Amusing Ourselves to Death. And he would talk about in the whole process of reading, but also writing, it gave people an opportunity to think. So like when Benjamin Franklin, when he used to take a quill and he put it in the ink, well, in the process of writing, when you had to re-ink the pen, there was that space that allowed a person to kind of process. And one of the things with anxiety today is that much of our media, it comes very rapid fire. I mean, like it's if you take a break from watching movies, TV, anything, and then go watch a movie, you'll be amazed at the synaptic overload that happens. So you're right on this, and having kind of a conversation, because sometimes we need to feel what we need to feel, you know, say what we're actually really saying, and then ask ourselves, like, is that true? You know, I feel like God doesn't like me, you know, God so loved the world. Right. What love has the Father lavished on us that we should be called children of God? Well, I think God's not near to me. Hebrews 13:5, I will never know, not ever leave you nor forsake you. So it's pressing into the truth, being truthful about how we're feeling, but also allowing what's true about who God is and who we are to come out of that as well. Rosie?
I feel like it's what anxiety likes to do is to paralyze you. And what you're saying, Tommy, is that you move into action. And even if the action is writing it down, it is you've gone from a corner of fear because, you know, when we've talked about it in our own family, my sons have said it feels like I'm in a corner. And even by writing it down, you're making a step out of the corner because anxiety doesn't want you to move into the direction of God.
Wow. Right. It's all about that suppression. And the less we can do to suppress the fear and face it, then we actually get to see the resolution and the healing. I think the reality is, too, a lot of this is baked into a lot of this is this corrupted sort of belief that we have, many of us. And that corrupted belief happens in a lot of different ways, personally for people. But it usually looks like something like, I need to impress God. I need to be good enough to earn the redemption that I've been given and the grace that I've been given, or he just would probably be disappointed in me if I was honest. But this resolution that we're thinking about isn't you and I performing better for God. Resolution looks like allowing God to heal us, because that's what he's been after this whole time. For God so loved the world that he put himself on the line completely and gave everything he had just so that we would be free, not so that we would not so he'd get a better draft pick and so he'd have a better team, right? Well, he was doing fine without us.
And he's doing,
he loves us.
Hey, he's doing, the Lord's doing great on that. And what I'm excited is next week being able to come back and talk about some recovery tools and some things that actually help our listening family as they're going through these things to move forward. Bill?
Yeah, Tommy, thank you so much for being on the Monday Afternoon Mix. You can take this off your bucket list.
Yes. I just checked it off on my wall.
Awesome.
The biggest thing on my list.
Look forward to having you on next week as well. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, that wraps up our Monday Afternoon Mix. That was a great discussion with Tommy Carreras. Thank you for introducing us to him, David.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Rosie.
And Rosie, great comments.
And Tommy, really appreciate that.
All right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, I got Marshall Siegel in the green room. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.